Hello and welcome back to Road to Revamp. My name is Sagar and this is the third episode of the third season of our podcast series. In today's episode, we have a guest who is a versatile alpha male. He is a competitive power lifter, a deadly martial artist, and an accomplished fitness coach. When most of us finish our college in our early 20s, he is educating the budding fitness trainers and managing the fitness chains. He has a plethora of certifications and educational qualifications with a room filled with trophies he won in powerlifting. Road to Revamp proudly presents Pocket Hercules, Ishan Sharma.
Hi Ishan, welcome to Road to Revamp, and let's start something which we were planning for so long. So let's start with your introduction. How did you start, who you are, and how did you start in fitness industry?
First, thanks for having me here, bhai, and I'll try to be as informal as I can be. So I'm just a regular lad who's trying to, you know, do what he loves. Mm-hmm. And make a few bucks out of it. Mm-hmm. And I personally I have always loved the physical culture. This is the only thing I have been in for the most of my life. I've been training for competitive athletic endeavors since I was around 12 or 11. Mm-hmm. So it's been more than 10 years or so.
What's your age now?
22.
Oh, wow. Such...
young, yeah.
Such young, and you have been in this industry for 4 years.
Yeah, almost 4 years.
Awesome.
So exactly when I, you know, got legal age.
Yeah,
I just cleared my A's, and as soon as I cleared my A's, I was doing internship, and at that time it was pretty difficult, but now, yeah, the industry is treating me well.
So how come you got such calling? Like, I started in this industry when I was 28, and from an engineer to a CrossFit trainer. But how come you just found this calling so soon?
Yeah, so about
how
that,
can you be so lucky?
Yeah, I'm really fortunate, bro. Yeah. I'm really fortunate to have good people around me at right time in my life, and I had amazing mentors. So some of them have been some of the best martial artists, and in my opinion, some of the best fitness professionals India has ever produced. So a few of them are Kaushik Joy Sane, Ricky Ranjit Sahni, Raul Mokhtar. Like, there's a ton of people, Jahangiras. If I start, you know, naming people, it will be, you know, thoda sa injustice for...
Yeah.
So it's just, I had amazing and beautiful mentors since starting. Mm-hmm. And when I was fighting, few of them got me into the idea that I can really coach people. And first two people were, again, Kaushik Joy Sane and Ricky Ranjit Sahani. They got me into this, and they forced me to clear my American Council on Exercise diploma, like the basic level diploma, not the sports conditioning specialist, which I did recently. So they were like that, they saw this in me, that I love to help people out.
Okay.
And martial arts was my calling back then. It will always be, like, fighting has always been the first love, and it is always going to be. So then, like, becoming a strength coach, strength and conditioning coach more specifically, it got thoda sa aur specific. So after a few years of, you know, just being in the industry and doing what everyone else does, I started this calling that I really wanted to help fighters out.
Okay.
And other athletes out.
Mm-hmm.
And in the starting, I felt like I was capable for that. But later on, I felt like I could use more education and more specific education for athletes. Then I went for my higher level diploma, which was again from American Council on Exercise, and it was sports conditioning specialist. So then I got into the area or domain of the strength and conditioning.
Okay.
And everything became way more beautiful.
How do you merge these two passions you have for strength and for martial arts, and how do you bring both of them together on a platter for your clients?
Yeah, so mostly the people that I am training, a very few of them have very specific interest in fighting, or a very specific interest in like getting brutally strong per se. But these people, they what they lack is more. So I'll give you an example. There was a lady who had a ligament issue, and she's 50 years old, and I believe it was the patellar tendon. I'm not sure if it's a ligament or what, but she had certain problems going on with her, and she came to me. And in the starting, I was like that because I just cleared my education in this field, like the strength and conditioning domain, and I was like, I wanted people like that. Who are actually willing to compete in athletic endeavors. And I started helping her out, just like a regular coach would. I took her and I started helping her. And it was an amazing experience. Using those particular skill set of a strength and conditioning coach and helping regular people out. Yeah. So that was there. So most of the people that I am helping do not expect to get brutally strong or to get very good at fighting. So few of them, I train a few people, Muay Thai and basics of grappling. Again, this person, he just loves to move around. He really enjoys the movement aspect of fighting. And obviously, fighting makes everyone more capable in overall life. It gives you such an edge that when you know that you can beat the hell out of a person who is in front of you, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
That's a very beautiful feeling, because that makes you secure in yourself. Mm-hmm. That makes you a very secure person in the heart. And that security, it takes time. Mm-hmm. It really requires some time, some discipline or tapasya to get.
But I think fitness people are the most insecure people. They're always worried about their looks. They're always worried about what they're doing in the gym and outside the gym. Like, I see people are spending more time in the gym than in their office.
100% agree to that, bro. So this is one of those industry where, like, I absolutely love my industry. I have nothing against it. But the most con man jobs, what I have seen in front of me, are the fitness professionals or health professionals.
I'm actually talking about those people who come to the gym. And they are mostly, you know, spending a lot of time in cafe and then on the floor and then in bathrooms. They are just looking at their muscles. It is obsession.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, in my opinion, this is the responsibility of fitness professionals to tell them to, you know, just calm down on their obsessions and just live a real life or just make the training and don't make it the whole life. Training is a part of life, but it is not the whole life. Like getting jacked, getting few percentages, 5% of your body is good. It's pretty good for health. It makes you look better, and looking good is
aesthetically
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But when you get into the dysphorias, then it becomes a problem. And in my opinion, fitness professionals, it is the responsibility of fitness professionals to take care of these people. And when they themselves are not taking care of this thing, like this insecurity thing, which is drastically spreading in the overall industry for the regular people you are selling, I strongly believe it is not because of these people. It's because of the professionals. It's because in the end, I tell everyone that I am not a god come messenger or a prophet or anything, but still in the end you will be idolized. It is that kind of a job. They think of you as a coach. They think of you as a very highly person, and when that is going around in your life, it is your moral responsibility to take care of people and to guide them on the right path, and to hold yourself with some some moral responsibility.
Some dignity, integrity must be there.
Integrity, yes. Yeah. And if you yourself are always obsessed with things like this, mm-hmm. like about your looks, and in my opinion, looks again are good, but they should not be the whole life. The whole life should not revolve around that, or your whole life should not revolve around dropping a few fat percentage fat, or just getting 5 pounds on the barbell.
Yeah.
So it's again, it might sound hypocrite because I personally love to strength train and I'm a meathead, but in the end, it is part of my life. It is not everything, and. Also, I compete in serious athletic endeavors.
Right.
Regular people do not. So they do not have to spend that much time in the gym.
Yes,
they do not have to spend that much time outside the gym thinking about gym or thinking about their diets.
Right.
So that is the problem with the overall industry, I see. And most of the times it is spread by people who are actually themselves insecure about their body image.
Maybe. In a way, I think it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Like more people, you know, joining physical culture, they are moving more, but in a way it's going beyond the permissible limits, because if everyone is going for marathon and if everyone is going for fitness competitions, like these days fitness competitions are happening for regular Joes. So I mean, these people, those who have never done anything in their life, and when they win somewhere and in useless competitions, to be very precise, there is no recognition. There is no, you know, you're not getting anything. Only 100 people are clapping. You're getting some Instagram likes. That's not going to give you anything but the ego boost.
Right.
And that push people too far.
Yes, it does.
And I have seen people getting injured, and I mean, housewives tearing their knees apart because they're going for a marathon. So I think it has gone beyond a certain point. We should limit such I would say provocations.
Provocation, exactly.
We shouldn't push these people too far.
Yes, and again, like all about getting jacked, getting healthier, getting better endurance for life, and you know, just having a better, like making your machine a better functioning machine for overall functions that you're going to perform. But again, in the end, it's the overall functions that you're going to perform are not supposed. So not every car is a race car.
Yeah, exactly.
This idea or this philosophy might be better. Like, not every car is a race car. There are some cars which are just like Ubers.
Yeah.
And they need performance. Like, they need to travel, you know, all the time.
So, like hundreds of kilometers every day.
Every day.
Yeah. So they will never be get... And they should not try to become BMW's.
A race car.
Yeah. They, exactly. This is the whole thing. So, I mean, on... if we'll just... stretch this conversation a little further, and if I take your opinion about training a beginner into strength,
mm-hmm.
if an extreme beginner is coming or a grandma is coming to you, how would you approach their training?
See, so basically I just give them a very basic, so it's not even a proper movement screening, like the protocols that we have been given by certain educational systems.
Yeah.
I just see how they basically move, looking at their gait, looking at their squat, like however bad it is, it's fine. Just have a look at it and just get a regular feedback from them. How do they feel around the whole day, like performing regular activities?
Right.
You'll get a lot of idea by that only. Like,
mm-hmm.
can you reach up all the way over your head and, you know, take a box out of something?
Yeah,
a cupboard,
kitchen cabinet.
Yeah. Or maybe can you get down in a mopping position, Indian mopping position, yeah. and you know
squat
the squat. Yeah, squat more like hunches.
Yeah,
more like hunches where knees are traveling mm-hmm. a bit more far right. from the you know ankles. And it's in a like a sissy squat like yes. you posted a yes. few weeks back. So something like that. So if you're not very comfortable in that kind of position and you're not able to perform or move around in that kind of position, and looking at the body weight and body composition too, if you're a 5'2" woman and you weigh around, you know, 70 kilos and you are 50 years of age, most probably you will not feel comfortable, or you are going to tear or, you know, irritate something when you're getting into that mopping position. Yes. And another problem is that people do not have to get into those positions these days because they have house help. So they don't even know that how much limited they are in the physical movement domain. Again, it's not about being competitive. It's just about getting all the physical capability mm-hmm. that you need to perform in daily life. Right. And you are not supposed to restrict yourself entirely just because... So it's a thin line between getting too competitive and getting too much of under expectations from yourself. Yeah. So you need to get that right balance, looking at their lifestyle and what they might have to do someday, or you know, just getting into a basic squat should it's a right of every human being, in my opinion. If like we should try to give everyone a basic regular squat. It's one of the basic things human beings are yes. supposed to do, or just to lift things from the ground pain free, or you can call that a deadlift if yeah. you want to be cool. So that's the basic human movement that every human being deserves, and that is what our responsibility is to give to them. So a grandma, yeah, again, doing a very basic movement screening, just getting the regular feedback from them, and then working on their stability. Mm-hmm. First, the basic level stability is there in very regular movements. Then we will move towards the primal moving patterns and fix up their gait a little bit, fix up their squat a little bit and other movement patterns. Make them lift stuff over their head with a proper and clean posture. Most of the times their thoracic extensor... No, they don't have good thoracic extension because like most probably they have fat or the adipose tissue in, you know, the mammary glands that makes them, you know, hunch forward. And with yeah. the old age and the lifestyle they have been living, that makes it really bad. Right. So, yeah, like just giving them these basic capabilities, like moving your hand over your head properly and extending it.
Yeah.
Just that feeling, just walking around this, again, the example of that lady, just squatting pain-free is a right of everyone.
Yeah.
So it's like just sitting on a chair and getting up without pain, you know, that's the right of everyone. So giving her that capability, like strengthening her connective tissues, has been a beautiful experience for me. It feels like I gained something back. Obviously, it is financial transaction, like you're taking money from them, but it gives you certain amount of, you know, fulfillment. Maybe it's right. the age, or maybe it's just the profession. I don't know. A few people might just think of it like a professional thing. But for me, it is way beyond that.
Yeah.
And it's subjective, person to person.
So it's you're saying that strength has different meaning for different people.
Exactly.
Yeah. So for a grandma, it's having better tissue health and a pain-free lifestyle
yeah.
is strength. And for a powerlifter, lifting a lot of weight is strength.
Yes.
And for a fighter, just being able to
take someone down or hit someone really hard,
really hard,
or maybe just to move around in the, you know, on the mats or wherever they are fighting. So again, I do help, like I talk about mostly about general population even after being a strength and conditioning coach, because like being very realistic, I do help if you athletes. But I don't take money from them right now.
Mm-hmm.
The reason behind that is most of the times athletes don't have money. And we have to be very realistic about the right. aspirations. Most of the people, they don't do strength and conditioning education or like sports conditioning specialist kind of a course. Just because they know that they will there's not going to be a lot of, you know, avenues. They're not going to make tons of money right after clearing that exam. Maybe someone would like to do a weight management specialist. And that's financially, in my opinion, that's a very safe investment because everyone wants to manage their weight. But again, coming back to what you love to do, I personally feel like I have always liked giving back to the community.
Right.
And like if I can help a fighter out, because I know the kind of pain they are always in. And that is why I have been helping a few martial artists and fighters out these days with their training programming and just the soft tissue health and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't charge them for that. The main reason is mostly because they just cannot pay and I do not want them to, you know, run away from the basic sport. Because I personally feel that this is one of the most underrated art forms, like, you know, hitting someone in the head with your hand or the, you know, choking someone out. It's a very beautiful feeling, but it's a very underrated art form. And I don't expect everyone to get into it. But for the people who just love it for the sake of it, I do not want them to get out of it. I really want them to enjoy that rush of hitting someone in the head and still shaking hands with them later on and or hugging them afterwards.
A violent businessman. So you are a manager in a gym in such a young age, and you're a fighter and you're a powerlifter. How do you manage everything? Like, it could be a very good life lesson for people like me who are, you know, I'm way older than you, but still, I have no managing capabilities. So, just throw some light on this.
Yeah, so, about that, see, there are a few things. Like, first, these days, I'm not competing in any sort of martial arts-based or fighting-based competitions anymore. My training of martial arts is only a few rounds of shadow boxing or shadow Muay Thai, if you would. But nothing more than that in once a week.
Mm-hmm.
These days, my present focus in my athletic endeavors is just to get strong, brutally strong, and become the best powerlifter that I can be. I absolutely love the rush of lifting of the heaviest weight around in the room and being the smallest guy in the room at the same time. Maybe it's an ego issue, but I still love it. So
is it an insecurity?
Maybe it can be. Again, it definitely can be. But again, I just love the rush and I just cannot. And I have lifted. So in my home, like mostly no one is there when I'm training. Mm-hmm. And I have very primitive setup at my home. If someone is on my Instagram.
On the roof, you have.
Yes, you've seen that. Yes. So that's a very old school setup. My uncle, Chacha, he got that setup when I was really young. And he used to compete in powerlifting. And he wanted me to compete in that too. But at that time, I did not want to. At that time, I really loved beating the hell out of people. But now, I really got a calling for this thing. And I started, you know, going to full potato into the strength and conditioning and powerlifting as a sport. And now, I, with a very good mentor or a friend, Tejas, who happens to be a very good strongman and competitor and powerlifter. This guy, he got me into the strongman, and like I was having fun. I was doing a squat specialization sky kill, and out of nowhere, we did a gym meet, and then on the next day, I went to the strongman meet, and on the gym meet, it was not a PR, but it was a maintenance number on my deadlift. And the next day when I went to the strongman meet, I pulled from the same height on an axle bar 10 kilos more. So it was an amazing thing. And I was severely underweight for the meet, strongman meet. So it's most of the people are listening to it. They're not watching the video.
Right.
I am 5'3", like 5'2" more like that.
Don't worry, we'll post your video.
Yeah, and I weigh around 65 kilos most of the times. And when I can get heavy, maybe I've been close to 69 kilos and I've been really fat, but I don't feel very athletic and comfortable in that. And in India, the lightest category that you can compete in good strongman competition is 75 kilo, minus 75 kilo. So I was severely underweight for my competition, but I really loved the you know athletic aspect of it. It is like CrossFit for me. So like you can, because I lifted a stone and I sprinted around lifting that. I lifted a log, 70 kilo log over my head, and for multiple reps. It was a fun thing to do, and it's very fun. And especially the axle bar deadlift, exactly one day after competing in a powerlifting meet. It was a home meet, but like hitting PRs and everything, and you know, pulling that axle bar and 180 kilo axle bar, it was an amazing feeling. I did not know how to use the wrist straps because I never used them. I was competing in raw powerlifting, which means without any sort of equipment, just using a belt, that's it. So sometimes I use my mouth guard because I have this habit of chipping my teeth. And also because that just gave me a good mindset, like I'm in a fight. So that's a mental cue. I like to pull on myself. It's a technique. So it's a psychological psyching up things. When I'm having my mouth guard, so when I used to fight, it was same thing. Like I would just bite on the mouth guard and go for it. Same goes with the powerlifting, man.
And same goes for life.
Same goes for life. Same, exactly the same. Just
so
bite
you
on the.
To travel with your mouth guard.
Yes, I do carry that in my bag all the time.
You might need that
all the time. No, mostly I don't need that.
No,
that's
fine. It's funny. Okay, so you live a really busy life.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every day you are spending 8 to 10 hours on the floor and then training yourself.
Yeah.
How do you manage your recovery? Because I think in powerlifting, it matters. Like it matters in everything. In general for any person. But as a powerlifter, how do you manage your recovery? Some practical tips if you want to give our listeners.
So, first thing, just maintain a very good sleep hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good idea for everyone. I tell everyone to maintain a good sleep hygiene. Like, get into a stable temperature. Like, if you use AC, then get into a very stable temperature. Try to get the same temperature all the night. And get the same thing on the, you know, the lights. So try to close all the you know windows and turn off all the curtains so that there's no pitch dark room. Yeah, that's a very good thing to do. And turn off or at least cover all the LEDs which are staying in your room. Or if I personally don't find good night mats very, like, you know, efficient of a thing to, you know, make mosquitoes run away.
Mm-hmm.
So I rather just do not turn that on at nights. And I keep the charger and everything, like my cell phone, which is an essential thing, but I try to keep them 1 foot away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And just turn off your phone. Like if you're not turning off, like just keep it on silent, keep it actually away from you. And these are the very basic things of maintaining a good sleep hygiene. Get 8 hours sleep or 7 hours sleep. That should be your target at least. This window of 7 to 8 hours is a very sweet one. So get into a good habit of sleeping, which is like the most important thing. Most of the time people are coming back from the work. And even I'm guilty of this,
mm-hmm.
but I strictly try to maintain my sleep hygiene. And you know, coming back from home after a long day, and then you're talking to people on the phone on the way, and when you've reached home and you're clearing your personal life stuff,
mm-hmm.
like maybe a spouse, maybe a girlfriend, whatever,
mm-hmm.
so you're just, you know, checking up with that. I suggest people do that, but have very strict safe time for yourself, because everyone deserves certain amount of it's the love that you're giving to yourself. It's me time.
Yeah.
And that sleep, you deserve it. You've earned it. So just sleep and have that good sleep. After that, about the foods. So personally, I am not crazy into nutrition, but I try to keep my meals pretty repetitive, but a little bit varying. By that, what I mean is I try to consume, I like relatively higher sodium. during my training days, because when I'm training, it really depletes. Like you sweat and the sodium depletes. Another, like this like stereotypical thinking that higher sodium is going to be directly correlational to your, you know, blood pressure. It doesn't work like that. So there's a lot of other factors which plays role. And like recent researches are there. Some I'll try to find some PubMed research and post that later on. So that is there. I try to maintain my electrolytes throughout the day, if not the sodium. Like a better word for it would be electrolytes. When you say electrolytes, everyone finds, wow, he's taking care of it. But when you say the sodium specifically, they're like, no. So, and also a good sodium to potassium ratio does help a lot. So if you're consuming sodium, just have good amount of potassium. That's going to be...
What should be the ratio, if you can tell us?
I don't measure it per se. Okay. I just consume good food. When you feel like you're having a craving for salty foods, not for really fat or obese people, but there are times people do have cravings for it when they're training.
Yeah.
When they're training, that is a time when you need it. I'm not suggesting to have a burger or Subway. Just have a lemonade. Just make a shikanji, if you will, and keep consuming that during the training session. Your craving will go away, and that craving is there because your body needs sodium. So like, and also the potassium. So I eat a lot of tomatoes. That's something. And coconut water, it also, like, it is
so, it's pretty balanced electrolyte in itself.
So I consume a few coconuts, and about that, like, I try to consume animals or proteins in almost every meal. Like, there should be some big protein component in every meal, so I just try to do that. And there are times you will skip on your meals, but just try to be very, just have to try to have very specific times for your in your eating habits, and be very specific. Just don't make it a very random thing that you are consuming something just for the sake of it or just for the social acceptance. Sometimes, yeah, you have to, and you have to live a realistic life. But do not start becoming, you know, addict to the fun foods.
Because the needs of a powerlifter and the needs of a common man are totally different.
Exactly. They are entirely different.
Yes.
And it's not only the powerlifting. I just love the physical culture. So I do train Muay Thai if I can. If I can, I train grappling if I can find a partner. Or if I just do solo drills. Or sometimes I just like to, you know, do strongman stuff and lift on those strongman equipments and do the training movements which help in strongman. So basically, when you're training like that, your eating habits are supposed to be a bit different than a regular person.
Right.
And you need certain level of discipline. But again, I tell everyone, that's similar things I apply to myself. Like, you're not supposed to be completely restrictive, and you still need to have some discipline in your life, because if you're not having a little bit of discipline in your eating habits, it's not gonna work.
It's same like entering in a war without armor.
Exactly. Yeah. Beautiful analogy.
Because I'm watching this series Troy these days.
Troy. So nice, man. I'm gonna watch it. I love the show Vikings. If someone have, like, I don't know if in the video was it captured or not, I'm wearing a hoodie where it's like Valhalla. So that's equivalent of the heaven. And,
So you talked about your diet and all, but you didn't mention carbohydrate. These days people always talk about carbohydrate restriction, and everyone is, you know, completely against the eating carbs. Any kind of carbohydrate. How can a powerlifter lift without that?
How can a regular person live without that?
People live without it. I see people living without that and sucking in their day-to-day life.
Exactly.
But for the sake of looking good
and underperforming.
I don't think anyone is trying to do any performance. They are just trying to do whatever they are doing to just look good. But is it helpful for a powerlifter to go without, even minimum amount of carbohydrate, like people eat hardly 100 grams of carbohydrate every day. Can you even lift with this kind of restriction?
So let's see. So in my opinion, the dietary protocols are very individualized.
Yeah.
But just the anecdotal evidence, like on myself and the people I have worked with, and the experience has not been very good. Though I know a few people who eat ketogenic diets or just very low carb diets, not exactly ketogenic, but very low carb, not specifically that. But yeah, they do both of these diets and they do perform. To be honest, they do perform. It is just a matter of right overall compensation. And in my opinion, it is, you're not supposed to restrict yourself out of a certain macronutrient to that crazy extent. It is not a very smart thing to do, especially when you're doing performance-based endeavors or you're trying to perform in life. So when you said that most of these people are trying to look good, but they're not trying to perform, they're actually, in my opinion, they're trying to perform. They're trying to perform in life overall. Yeah. So when your sex life sucks because you're getting a low libido because of glycogen, you're not depletion. And I have experienced that myself. Like, you compete and fight. So when it's fighting, there was a time I did cut from all the way from 62 kilos and it was 14 days. And by the way, that competition, I got knocked out. That was the first time I got knocked out in my life. I did beat the hell out of the first opponent. Second opponent, he did knock me out. And the weight cut can be a big, big, big reason for that. So I did cut to 52 kilos. And I don't know how much that is in pounds, but it's 12 kilo gap. And not even 14 days. I believe it was 10 days or a week. So when you're doing that kind of a crazy thing in such low time span, I had effects of that for the entire month. And when people are cutting weight for such athletic endeavors for at such a young age.
Not just athletic endeavors.
In general.
They are getting ready for their birthday.
Yeah.
Beach trip. Getting ready for a marriage ceremony. They have to wear a certain dress.
Yeah.
So they are trying to get fit into. But for them, it is okay. It is maybe sustainable. Because after that event, they can enjoy their life.
Yeah.
But for a fighter or a power lifter,
performance-based athlete,
it's suicidal.
It's killing yourself.
Yeah, so just fitting into that weight category and trying to cut the weight.
That's a very sad thing which happens. And in my, that I have certain views on the weight cutting thing too. Like, I have always cut weight. I know how to cut weight. I like just by the experience of cutting weight, I became really good at cutting weight, okay?
Mm-hmm. And if you want to share some knowledge bombs with us about it.
I don't know on your podcast if someone who's going to cut weight is listening, but yeah.
Yeah, they might.
They might?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
just some quick tips.
Quick tips would be restrict, see, for a very short-term weight cut, avoid those. Just avoid those. Most of the times, it's gonna hinder your performance. Do not cut more than, I wouldn't give you a percentage, but I would give you kilograms.
Yeah, just
I would say do not cut more than 3 to 4 kilos, including water, out of your total weight around 1 week of a competition. If you're an athlete, 3 kilos in fact, that would be a better thing, because in the end it is going to take away from your athletic performance. You have to understand that, and you have to see how much is the refeed window or rehydration window. Certain times the rehydration window is not there. If you're going for a 24-hour weighing in or you're going for the same day weighing in, they are entirely different things. And in my opinion, if you're cutting weight, and also, yeah, it works. It's different for enhanced people. So I haven't talked about that. If you're enhanced or in the layman terms, if you're taking drugs, so it does differ. Your performance might or might not go that bad.
Mm-hmm.
But for a person who is natty or is not taking any drugs or any enhancing substance, will most probably suffer problems because I and then
so
both.
So what do you do exactly to just cut 3 or 4 kgs in a week?
In a week, it is mostly, it's a very basic things around 1 week mark, I start drinking a lot of water. Right. I start keeping myself very much hydrated, and around 7 day, so 10 day, I'm giving a 10 day cycle. Basic example, yeah. So 10 day cycle. In the starting, I'll just decrease my total calorific intake. So I mostly do not count my calorific intake all the time, but because they are the same meals all the time, so I know how much calories I'm consuming overall. I have a rough idea or estimate of that.
So how much calories you cut?
So I cut around 30%
okay.
out of it around 10 day mark.
Okay.
And then 10-20% in a 4-3 day mark, I get down on, but it is again a very gradual coming down of a process. Then when I have reduced down to around 50% of the calories, for example, I was consuming around 3000 calories and I'm a very jacked person. And I was performing the same way. Most probably, if you're having 10 days, most probably you will not be training the same way in a strength sport. And even in the fighting, you would not spar. You don't want to get hit in the head exactly before your competition. Right. You just want to get those skills right, or you just want to get some movement, or just want to do some soft tissue work around a 1 week mark, in my opinion. And you do hard sparring, but that's not the exact time to do the hard sparring finally. So, and also you have to understand, the more you are depleting on the nutrients that you're giving to your body, the more rest you need to give it to the body, because it's just not gonna function. Again, performance is not only fighting, it's about living a life. If you have a real life profession, if you're sitting in the office or doing whatever, you will have repercussions in that too. You will have repercussions in your personal life. Okay, you will get angry, you will feel lightheaded, you will not be able to, mood swings will be there, because your androgen system takes a big hit when you give it, you know, when you restrict it from consuming nutrients. So there are certain things which are going to be there.
Is there any micro and macro, not micro but macronutrient balance you maintain when you are cutting 30% and 50%?
Rough balance. So because proteins are relatively higher in satiety, I consume them more. It's a very basic diet. So it's, for a lot of people, they try to overcomplicate things just because they want to sell stuff a lot of times, in my opinion. Again, I might be hated for saying these things in overall community, but I have to say things like
still,
realistic.
Still there should be some basic guidelines.
The basic guideline would be around 60% of it. It should be protein, around 60% of it. You still need to consume your carbs and your greens. In my opinion, greens are really, really underrated micronutrients, but you need to consume micronutrients. Yes. They are the actual, people consume multivitamins all the time. I tell them, do not consume multivitamins all the time, because you can get vitaminosis, which is a real thing. And the real problem is people lack in one or two nutrients, right, because they don't have a variety, because just because they follow the very basic bodybuilder diets, the bro diets, which consist of, you know, brown rice and chicken breast. So they don't consume their micronutrients properly, and that is something I personally feel the overall average Indian diet really excels in, consuming micronutrients. So if you're making a lot of vegetables, like I have always had that culture that born in a vegetarian family, we were always consuming a lot of vegetables. So that was the plus I have had. So I still consume a lot of vegetables. Exactly coming to the close weighing in mark, 4 days cut, I try to decrease the vegetables and my carbohydrates 20% too. So it will be a very small quantity. Again, 60% protein is still there. And by that time, you should have cut around more than 2 kilos or around 3 kilograms, sometimes 4 if you're a big boy or a girl. So then it's all about the water cut. You can cut water in 2 days or 1 day time span. I personally like to cut it in 2 day span just because it's relatively, I personally find it safe. Like decreasing my intake to 50% of what I was doing. And remember, I started with telling you that I'm consuming extra water.
Yeah.
So I'm making my body secrete more water
right.
overall. And I'm consuming a lot of thermogenic response. I'm creating a thermogenic response in my body by consuming a lot of proteins.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a pretty practical method. There is science to it.
Yeah.
But still, I tell people, just do not overcomplicate it. Just because people do overcomplicate it.
Yeah, and that's complication makes money now.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was telling you. People sell stuff out of that.
Yeah.
And then because you're consuming, you're making a thermogenic response in your body, and also you're making your body secrete more water, you're burning the calories, and at the same time, you are peeing water, and you are depleting of yourself out of the water.
Many electrolytes are going out.
Yes, they are. And it's a sad thing, but hey, a man has got to do what a man has got to do. So then you are depleted in 2 day time span. So 50% of water intake, and the last day you're just consuming 1 liter of water, not more than that in my opinion, maybe 1.5. And big boys, I have seen big boys just cutting water at one night, and they get down to 1.5 kilograms or 2 kilograms of water cut. But for like a person who weighs around 70 kilos or 60 kilo competitor like me, then the water cut is different. It is supposed to be different from a higher level, higher weight category competitor, because you just have more place to put water in and more bigger. It's a bigger bucket. It's a smaller bucket. Think of it like that. And it is what it is. Just don't make it more than what it is. It's, you can go emotional and cry around, but then don't compete in like competitive endeavors. If you're competing in athletic endeavors, which are highly competitive, then people should, and again, going back to, I know I run to and fro a lot from the conversation,
okay.
But going back to the topic of making regular people doing athletic stuff, that is one of the big problem, because people keep on ranting about their personal life on social media because of this, and they're always in a bad mental health. You need to be a strong person overall, psychologically and physically, to compete in these endeavors, in my opinion. And if you are not a competitive person overall, these things should not be pushed on you.
Yeah.
And if you are still competing in that, after people like me telling you everything, don't bitch about it on social media. Okay.
But the thing is, my problem with most of the people is, in general, I'm not talking about athletes, they are way more sensible when they are cutting weight or doing anything like that. These methods are being adopted by
regular people,
regular gym people.
Yeah,
they are, and they are on one diet or other all the time.
Yep,
all the time. This obsession must go.
Yes, it should. That is like, see, that is the thing. Nutrition is the, like, I see online training groups all the time. Most of the people who have no business in training people online are training people online.
Right.
I remember we were talking about online training before the podcast.
Yes.
And the reason behind that, like, I personally feel most of the people are not qualified to train people on the floor, are training people online. And
because
that's
easy.
Because it's easy. And it's more eye-catchy. You just need to get a few posters. You just need to make a few sexy videos. You need to put some musical, motivational music in that. Put some Dan Bailey in that or whatever this guy
is. You can easily understand this by... I'm just interrupting you.
Yeah,
in the
no
middle.
Problem.
Like, if you are chatting on with someone on WhatsApp or on a Messenger, it's way too easy to create a persona that you are some kind of philosopher. But as soon as you just pick up the phone and you're talking to a person face to face or on a call, you are a totally different
human being.
You are falling short of the words.
Yes.
And the same thing happens like when you are one-on-one and your client asks that, what is the reason behind this?
You don't have the Google.
Yes, it's so easy there.
Yeah, but you're entirely right about that. The reason behind that is the gap of time span in response.
Yeah.
So when you have more time span to respond to someone, you can do your previous research and you can create that persona. You can look
you
like
can
a
fake more.
You can fake more. That's a better
that's
a better representation of what is happening. You can fake more and you can just create a fake overall identity.
Yes.
But when you are there, not even on phone, I would say in person, you lack those skills.
Yes.
And then you're dead. So in my opinion, people should always, in the industry, it's very, again, I'm talking about a very niche area, but people need to learn and perform on the floor first. There's a reason behind making everyone doing the most basic stuff which a floor trainer does and then graduating to the personal trainer, whatever, in my opinion.
Yeah.
There's a reason behind that. And I believe everyone should do that in this industry, because you learn so much which you cannot just learn from the books, or you just cannot. It's an injustice you're doing to people when you're training people online without you yourself knowing anything in the realistic domain of experience. Or you have not. A certain time I see people training people deadlifts. So again, I would not name anyone or any training group online, but these people are programming deadlifts for people, and these people are performing a fucking RDL on the floor, not even a real deadlift, and they are having pain in their lumbar spine, and then and because the online trainer has told them to do so, and they are sending them the videos, and they are not even to break down the right
movement.
Technique.
Yeah.
Yeah, the right human movement that they are supposed to do, and the right specific movement for their leverages.
Mm-hmm.
They're not able to break down that. So then they will keep on performing the bad physical movement or bad human movement, and people like me who are there in gyms will look at that, and I might help them out once or twice. But because it is between a teacher or in a student, or more precisely in more professional of a relationship between a professional and a
it's
someone
not good to interfere in someone's
business.
Yeah.
But it breaks my heart, and it actually breaks my heart, because I am emotionally invested in my profession, and it's okay if someone is not, but I am, and that is why a lot of people around me do not like me, because I just speak out the truth, and that affects the business of those people. And
to be frank, Ishan, I have many online clients, and I reject many online clients because not everyone is ready for online training. Not
right.
Everyone can train online. People need to be touched. People need to be corrected then and there.
Mm-hmm.
And which is not possible for an online trainer. An online trainer can teach only those clients who have very good basics.
Yes.
Then only you can make a bit advanced program for them.
Right, because
they have the basic movement capacities. So I think that's really important when people are starting training online.
Definitely.
They must have spent... lots of time on the floor first.
Yes.
Yeah. Then only you can understand the problem with someone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you yourself, and personally, if you have some physical limitation, I can accept that. But if you yourself are not a practitioner or a follower of physical culture, you have no business, in my opinion, in working in this industry.
Yeah.
If you yourself...
In any industry,
you yourself do not... practice what you preach.
Yeah.
And not exactly what you preach, somewhere around what you preach. Physical culture is physical culture, in my opinion. People think I rip on bodybuilders. No, I really respect a lot of them. I absolutely love a lot of people who do bodybuild, but just because the strength of the character, it's not about, and people, when I talk about getting on the low body fat percentages, people think I am hating on them. No, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I really respect the kind of mental fortitude that you need to have to, you know, and the strategy that you need to have to get jacked and then get lean and perform a very skill-based endeavor. But again, for a regular person, should they copy that? No. So it's a, I know I keep on, you know, hopping.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Perfectly okay. So we are in the last leg of our conversation.
Yep.
And I would like to know about your future plans. So like right now you're a manager.
Yeah.
What, where you see yourself after 5 years?
See, in 5 years, I have been already and I plan to get a lot of freedom, if you might feel.
That's an like, interesting answer.
Yeah. A lot of freedom.
About ambitions and this
lot
much
of freedom.
Money I will make, but that's an interesting
answer. For me, it's freedom. So, see, I love what I practice and I love what I preach, and I just want more freedom to give away and to get stuff into myself, because I'm always going to be a learner. I'm pretty young, by no means I am a master of anything. I know better than a lot, but I know
some
less
things
than most.
Yeah.
That's how I look up to it, and I really look forward to learn from really good people and teach a lot of people who are actually willing to learn. Actually is the key word there.
And so my last question to you is, what will be your closing remark for fitness industry, for trainees, and for us, for the podcasters?
Yo, so that would be, get jacked, know how to fight, and love what you do. Because like, if you cannot love what you do, you're not gonna have fun doing it. And it's all about the experience, in my opinion. When you go out for a party, it's an experience. It's a rush. And again, if you're under barbell, it's a rush. So getting hit in the head or choking someone out, it's a rush. And helping or changing someone's life, whether it's an athlete or a regular person, it's a beautiful feeling to have. And so, again, get checked. Know how to fight and love 42.
Thanks, Ishan. Thanks a lot for being on our podcast.
Dhanyavaad, bhai sahab.
And in future, we'll like to discuss some specifics.
Awesome.
Like how to design a program.
Would love to do that.
And how to, you know, make a powerlifting program, and how to train a Muay Thai fighter, something like that.
Would love to do that, bro.
Yeah, so
let's
it was way more general thing.
Yeah.
But I would like to go more specific in future.
Definitely, let's do that. Let's do that very soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Awesome, thanks for having me, bro.
So, here we are at the end of this conversation with Mr. Ishan Sharma. But we're not done yet. Stay tuned, as we will be back again with another amazing conversation. This is Sagar signing off, and you are listening to Road to Revamp.